Oh God. Oh jeez.
Oh God. Okay. I'm gonna throw up.
I'm sorry. It's Friday. And Friday's macaroni and cheese day at the Hofbräu. I literally just sprinted home with a pound of meat and a pint of macaroni and cheese, and I just ate the entire thing with a liter of seltzer.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, it's like a bechamel. It's a very rich sauce. Mm. Oh, God. That's not going to get in the way, is it?
You look nice today. A Journal of Emotional Hygiene.
I have the problem of publicly swearing that I'll never go back to a restaurant. You know, if they've for the seventh time put mustard on my sandwich, I'll tell them, that's it. We're done.
You really do that? I don't see you being that guy. You really do that?
Well, I'm not that guy, and that's what makes it worse when I do, when the switch is flipped. And I get all shaky and sweaty.
You go straight to, but the thing is, and this is the thing, if you're like a really powerful guy and like, you know, Taekwondo and stuff, you got the confidence that you don't have to go straight into, I'm never coming back here.
Right.
Nuance. That's all I've got. I've got either we're the best friends in the world or I'm never coming in here again.
That's my problem. And unfortunately, you know, the victory is theirs when I come in the next week.
Yeah. I'm the guy who at a restaurant has to be forcefully held back from making passive-aggressive comments to the server by my girlfriend.
Adam.
This actually came up last night. We went to a restaurant that we go to, you know, every so often. It's one of my faves around the neighborhood, and the service was terrible, and I was getting out the pen. Roxana paid the bill. I was getting out the pen to write a passive-aggressive note on the check, and all I was going to say was, thanks for the delightful service. And I don't think that necessarily would have communicated the rage I felt, but Roxana wouldn't let me do that. She said, just leave it.
She didn't like that you were writing it in feces. Mm-hmm. She thought that was heavy-handed. Have we ever talked about tipping or tipping policy? I don't have one. I just tip too much consistently. And if the service is really bad, I tip too much minus 50 cents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did the same way I manage projects. I estimate how much I think it should be, then I triple it, and then I add 20%, and then I still feel like I got it wrong. And I walk away, and I'll come back to the table, and I mean, this happens to me all the time. There's a place we go, it's called Squat and Gobble. It's like this kind of like local place. And it's great because they're nice to kids, you know? And I'll go in there, and then I never know what to tip because it's got the thing. This is very Larry David, I apologize. But you go up to the counter, and you order, right? And they got the tip thing. Let's see, you put a tip in. But then they bring it to your table. Mm-hmm. You know, you got the little thing with the number and they go. I think there's a lot of situations where it's very unclear. So in that case, two different people don't know I tipped $5. So I've way over tipped, but both of them think I under tipped.
They don't really expect a tip. That's the secret. At those places where, you know, there's a tip jar at the counter, you go up and order your food. Really all you have to do is put a buck in. They're not even looking. Maybe some changes. Also, just so that they can hear it, but you don't need to actually tip at the table. That's the big secret.
Yeah, and you also, I mean, the thing is, I mean, this, we're in deep Larry David territory at this point, but it's absolutely true. And I mean, what is the core? What is the core of the whole Larry David problem? The core of the whole Larry David problem that I think we all suffer from, and what made that program so appealing, is that at the heart of it, we don't want people to misunderstand us, and then in our desire to be better understood, we make ourselves more poorly understood. And I think in that case, you go, oh, I want to make sure they hear I got a tip. You know, you throw a dime in, and now you look like a cheapskate, because they're not going to hear a five, you know? And then you got to do it again. Mm-hmm. Have you guys done different sorts of work where you get tips? Have you guys been in tip positions?
Yeah, I was a coffee maker for a summer in Michigan, and that was great, because you'd leave the coffee shop with about $1 or $2 for every hour you worked, which was not significant, but it was, you know, in 1995, it was decent walking around money.
You know, I mean, I love that. My wife and I talk about this all the time, that no matter how much it is, you remember, like, when you had a tip-based job, it just feels good to go home with actual cash in your pocket. You know, everything's so abstract now. You know, you pay everything with fake internet money, you get paid with fake internet money. You know what I mean? And it was nice. Like, when you're a waiter, you go home. Like, when I was a busboy, I'd go home with $40 on a Friday night, which was a giant amount of money for them. But, you know, now with coffee, I frequently tip very near to 100%. with coffee a lot of the time. Hmm. Adam, what's your? Do you have a basis? Do you have
too
a
rich for my blood? Yeah, it's generally a buck, a buck with a cup of coffee every day. Actually it's a buck with everything. A buck with $100 meal. A buck. That's the standard, right?
Well, to be fair, I mean that you eat at Starbucks. You take your girlfriend for the anniversary dinner, and you get 3 eggwiches and a fruit salad and
the birthday scone. Oh. Yeah. I once had a conversation with a woman at those little kind of convenience stores. There's a convenience store near where I went to college, and I got into a 20-minute argument. This woman, she had two false eyelashes that moved independently, and this wig that was about 5 degrees off of skew.
This is a Tom Petty video.
Is it customary? I always forget when I go to Canada. Is it customary to tip in Canada? It is, right?
Well, I think you just tip with words. You just, effusively thank them and mm-hmm. walk out bowing. And I think that suffices. Okay. Right? I hope. Oh, God.
I'm fascinated by these cultural differences, though, in different countries and really in different parts of our own country. It varies so much. And I think, we see so much, through things like television and the internet. It starts to feel the same. But there's a lot of differences, from mm-hmm. place to place. Mm-hmm. The other thing in Canada is you can park anywhere you want.
Really?
No, literally, if you're from the United States, you can literally park anywhere you want. And that includes you can make people move, you can make them leave, you could make them make additions to their home. And that's really just for where you're going in for a minute to get something.
Wow.
It's, they call it, it's parking, and they put a U in it, P-A-U.
It's socialized parking.
That's right. And a lot of people die. They die of that every year because of the...
The waiting.
They can't get a space, and so they go to the U.S. where they have the right to come in and force people out of their home to get breast cancer surgery, and that happens so many times. Really, 1 out of 5 people in Canada will die, and that used to be even more.
I heard in Canada you can't even choose your parking space.
No, the government has a form, and they don't even show it to you.
And it's based on some sort of formula that they've come up with to calculate your relative contributions to society, and that's how close you can park to where you
work. It's based on seniority. Literally where you are on the totem pole, vis-a-vis British Columbia. So if you are one of the Aboriginal, they call them the Aboriginal Americans of the North. If you are literally on the totem pole lower down, which is to say, you worship a crow or whatever,
right.
you can park almost anywhere you want. And then the higher up you go, until you're really in Parliament, it gets harder and harder. It's a complicated system.
Boy, Canada.
Canada. Now your lady's from Canada, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. She's on loan from Canada. I was thinking today about how Canadians love to say they love to subtly include themselves in the great American experiment by saying, "Well, in North America, it's like this," or the North American music is the North American music scene is it's pretty robust.
Well, they don't want to exclude their Mexican brothers.
Well, that's I think every time you say that, you do realize you're including Mexico, and you don't really want to, right? that's the nod. I think Canadians hate Mexico for being part of North America because there's no good word for it.
Could there be another term besides North America to exclude Mexico? Just the top 2/3.
Oh,
I like that.
Oh, that's good. The top 2/3. That's pretty good.
above the fold.
The Upper America.
Upper America.
White North America.
White America Heights. Oh, we had the best time. Unfortunately, we vacationed in Lower America, and boy, it was terrible. People were sleeping, and it was very hard to find a parking space. No, they're tough. The Mexicans, they are tough with the parking. God.
Awkward cake.
I'm drinking tequila as if it were Coca-Cola. I'm just drinking it. Like, I'm not even, I'm not pinching my nose and crying. I'm not praying to any kind of saint. I'm just drinking it. And it's fine. It's going down fine.
Are you really being serious? You're really doing this? What people may not realize is it's a Friday afternoon.
That's right. And this is actually a bit of a change for us because generally we record very late at night when we're all half asleep.
We've never recorded during daylight, as far as I know.
Well, usually, in fact, one of us won't be able to sleep, and so they'll wake the others up, and that's how an episode is recorded. So basically, one of us at any given time is sort of in a dreamlike fugue state. But not right now. No way.
Is it refreshing or you know, did you have you had anything to eat for lunch?
Yeah, well, I had lunch and then I drove back here, and it's very warm, and it feels odd. It's very light. I can see my body, which I generally don't like to be able to do.
Are you drinking from a glass or straight from the
bottle?
That's
exactly what I was wondering. I can't picture if I imagine. There's three ways I imagine this going down. One is that you have some kind of a respectable cup. And you're sipping it like a James Bond villain. Mm-hmm. There's another one where you're sitting there kind of desperately, like with a shot glass. And the other one is you're literally sprawled back at like a 12-degree angle with a bottle in your hand. Adam, what's your guess? What's your bet on that?
I actually think that Scott maybe has special tequila drinking glasses, but they're sort of like small champagne flutes because your design sense is so heightened. And I really do think that you probably have a different glass for every type of liquor in your house.
There is, in fact, a different kind of glass that's appropriate for drinking any type of liquor. But you're both wrong. I'm actually trying to spearhead a trend that isn't really taking off yet. It's to only drink tequila out of an Erlenmeyer flask.
That's the one that's all like kind of broad at the bottom?
That's right. It's sort of pyramidical. Mm-hmm. Shape leading up to a fluted upper third.
It's like the not a flute, probably more of a piccolo, but and you don't get as much aroma. It's like the opposite of a wine glass.
Exactly. It contains the aroma. It contains the potency of the drink until you are actually drinking it. And I like it. I think that there's a lot of room for a fashion towards scientific instrumentation at home.
Oh, I love it. We have flasks for different things. I love that. But I'm also bewildered by all the choices with glasses. And you know, like anything, when you're you know, from kind of a modest background, you assume that anything fancy might be a trick, right? You assume anything is it could be some kind of a test to see whether you're a sucker. And when somebody says, oh, that glass is for the Cabernet versus that one's for the Chardonnay versus that one's for the, you know, the Peter Meat. And I go, is that a wine? And it's not really. It was a test. You know? You're using the wrong glass for your Peter meat. Oh, sorry. Should I use the one with the handle? Do you know what I mean, though? And, like, it's just like the forks or any of that stuff. It's like it's this whole system, you know? And, like, do you really think it makes a difference, Scott? I mean, you enjoy a different glass for different things. It's like beers. Some people like a straight-up glass. Other people like a Pilsner kind of glass. You think it really makes a difference?
I like, you know what I like, and this is just a personal choice. I like very small glasses because it's a great indicator of progress. A small glass, I'm 11 beers in. And that feels good. That feels, you know, yeah. I'm not particularly drunk, but I'm it feels like I've done something today when I've woken up and immediately drunk 11 beers.
I was just reading this today, actually. The prop department on Mad Men, somebody was discussing about how in the early 60s, martini glasses were actually smaller back then. So it was easier to do a 3-martini lunch.
Really?
Again, an indicator of progress, sure.
Well, the people were also smaller.
Yeah.
It's true, they didn't have shots.
You've seen their beds.
Not as much nutrients.
In the 60s, people were like 5'2".
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, when they started having sexual intercourse in 1965, that's when people started getting bigger, and there was antibiotics in the meats, and I think a lot of it had to do with the kinks being unable to tour. And by 1968, you know, people were almost 6 feet tall.
And that's how the king size bed was developed.
That's correct. That is correct. And you know what I don't understand? You know, I'm trying to figure out if this is a cognitive bias or an availability heuristic. But it used to be when I'd go to the Goodwill, like it was only tiny people die and have their clothes go to the Goodwill. You never see like giant clothes at the Goodwill. And I don't know, is that a natural? Like, have you seen this? When you go to like a vintage clothing store, all the men's clothing is tiny. So maybe we're getting bigger. You know, maybe the ones who survive keep their clothes because they're still alive. You know, the little ones are dying off.
Oh, it makes perfect sense.
No, I don't think it does.
I should probably be dead by now.
Mm-hmm. You're not little. What are you talking about?
Oh, I'm a tiny little fella. I'm 5'7". I mean, I make up for it in girth, of course, but...
I thought 5'7 was the norm, the average, your average.
Is it really?
Nothing
That's
to be ashamed of.
That's I don't know. I was
always, you know, given nicknames that told me different when I was... Growing up, short stack.
Like a 570? They call you 570?
570. Short stuff. Shorty.
Just under 5'8"ster.
Little guy.
Short boy.
Big man, that one pissed me off.
You know, but everybody, future taller fella, Mr. slightly below average, mean. You know, everybody's got it hard. You know, you talk to people who are tall, they say the same thing. Or ladies who got their boobies early, like they talk about how hard it was. Like ladies who got no boobies when they're, you know, a kid, they're all sad because, you know, they wanted boobies. But then you get older. Yeah. But I mean, you know, you end up with back problems and you got to hold your books up in front of you because you don't want people coming by and pulling on your sweater. You know, it's awkward. You want to look, I think what you want, in my estimation, whether it's, you know, pubic hair or boobs or beer can cock, you want to look just a little bit more developed than everybody else, but not a lot. You don't want to be like a hideous freak. You don't want like a fire hydrant in your pants or something, you know. You don't want to be like so hirsute that like everybody's like not wanting to sit next to you in the locker room, you know.
Yeah. Did you guys go through the brief period right before you got like armpit hair that you just really, really wanted armpit hair? Did you go through
more
that?
More than anything in the world through today, I wanted armpit hair.
Still do. I still want it.
Yeah.
Still waiting.
I wanted to shave, sure. I wanted to drive, why not? You know, I wanted to figure out what the deal was between the lady's legs. But really what I wanted is I wanted luxurious underarm hair.
Yeah. Everybody else had it.
I think just the right amount of signification, just the right amount of like masculine signification.
Yeah.
When I was in sixth grade, and sixth grade was the crossover year when you went to middle school from elementary school, and so it's the first year of middle school, and I was assigned to share a locker with a new kid from a different elementary school, and he was unbelievably hirsute. Mm-hmm. He was done. He had already been through puberty. He was 11, and his penis was big, and he had lots of hair all over the place. He had a low voice. He was confused and, you know, pimply. And I was the opposite. I didn't know at the time, but, you know, I would end up being fairly late bloomer. And, you know, there was literally no hair. So when we'd walk to the showers, I'd just try and stay as close as possible to him so that it would look like he had so much hair that I hoped that it would look like that I had some of his hair. Like I was basically using his hair as camouflage for my own utter lack of it. I don't think it worked. I think it may have been a problem between us, and that's why we're not friends anymore.
No, it's miserable. I mean, you know, and the thing is, I'm exactly the same. I was a totally late bloomer, very, very, very late bloomer. And but you know, you talk about people. Like I had a friend, for example, in high school, who was basically, he had like Paul Simon level of baldness when he was like 15.
Oh, there's always the bald guy. You feel bad for the bald
so
kid.
So bad for and he was, it wasn't even like, I had another friend with a receding hairline and he would do this kind of like muffin poof thing with a curling iron to kind of whip it up into a froth. But this guy was legitimately, you know, like going all Paul Simon.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, he
bald
had.
Bald spot.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, you know, like kind of Rob Reiner sort of like, ooh, he's going bald and he's just old enough to drive.
Right.
That
right.
sucks. You know, that's the worst.
It does.
I guess you turn that to your advantage and you become the guy who buys beer for everybody, maybe.
Mm-hmm. You know, gives them advice on insurance or you get some kind of an AARP discount or something. The everybody wants the thing that they haven't got. That's what it comes down to. Whatever it is, you want the opposite thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of hair on my ass. I grew some of my hair, you know, at the sort of later than appropriate time, but you know, within the, and then all of a sudden it was an explosion, and then started to come up in places where maybe it wasn't always supposed to be there, like, you know, my upper shoulder area. And then I thought, that's weird. I wonder when that's going to stop. Probably pretty soon.
it'll just come in a certain amount, right? Like a mustache. It isn't like it goes down to your knees, right?
Well, it's just like, you know, it's probably going to grow a little bit and then fall out, and then I'll be fine. Maybe this is just a puberty thing.
Like baby teeth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which that's not what happens.
I you know, as you get older, everybody talks about like, you know, how your knees hurt, and you know, definitely my eyesight is getting worse. But there's two things I dislike so far about getting older, and one is the lack of symmetry. That my body is becoming less symmetric. Mm-hmm. I'm noticing that increasingly the two kind of you know, parts of my body that should be the same and align the same and look the same are starting to look different. Hmm. And I don't like that. And I also don't like the hair. I don't like the hair in the ears. I don't like the hairs in the nose.
Yeah, that's weird.
The eyebrow thing, I got a Brezhnev thing where like I have like four hairs that are like 6 inches long.
God, that's the weirdest thing of all is you wonder how it could have lasted so long on your forearm, the 6-inch long hair. Suddenly you look down and it's there like like an alien invader.
How did it survive? It seems like it's just from like an evolutionary standpoint, it would just have to, you know, get caught on something, like a subway or a, you know, an immigrant or something. It would be gone. You know? And you know, I had a pubic hair once. I kept it in an envelope. It was about 4 inches long. It's about 4 inches long, my hand to God. I was peeing, kind of idly, you know, plucking and hanging out, just doing a little bit of ad hoc grooming. This is about, I don't know, it's probably about 22. And I literally had a 4-inch pubic hair. It looked like a racetrack.
Merlin, I'm just gonna mail the rent here. Can I use
I'm just gonna
envelope?
Go. Do you have any change? I'm just gonna look in this envelope. Bang! Well, it's got a date on it. What? 1990. Whoa!
That is the sound effect that all pubic hair makes too.
Yeah, this one. You know, when I was when I didn't really understand pubic hair and I just knew it from Penthouse, I thought it would be like curly cues. I thought it would be like a corkscrew. No, but it's not. It's really more like hairpin turns, if you like. You know, it's really more like Le Mans or something.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's very
Le Mans, so to speak. Yeah. Yeah. Boy, we got burping. We got Adam's ass. Boy, this is. Yeah, it's hard. And then there's your penis. Wow.
Let's do some of that then.
Hands in a derby.
Last night I woke up in the middle of the night, two or three or something, and I just had one of those moments where your eyes flip open like shutters, you're looking around, you're utterly awake, and you don't know what to do to go back to sleep again. I walked around, I sort of had that weird nighttime paranoia of maybe I woke up because I heard a burglar and that woke me up, but I don't remember having heard it. So I walked around and I checked the doors and I looked out the windows and then I realized that I had turned the lights on so that if there was a burglar, they knew that I was walking around checking the doors with the lights on, looking out the windows. And then I realized that if they were standing outside, they could just see me there looking out at them. So I turned off the lights and quietly stood there, you know, for a good 5 minutes just to make sure that they thought I had gone back to sleep. And so when your wife wonders where you are and gets up and sees you looking out the window in pitch dark, motionless, it's hard to explain.
Over what? Over how much time did... I mean, because, you know, it's funny when you think about how compressed thoughts like that can be. Over how many seconds or minutes did that entire thing transpire?
It's probably about...
Where you went from my eyes are open to, like, I'm staring out the window like, you know, Malcolm X with a machine gun.
Probably about 5 minutes total. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I checked everything and walked around and checked on the kids and then you start checking weird places like the linen closet. Or I do.
They would expect you to look in all the non-weird places.
That's
but
exactly
would you
the logic.
Would you look for a giant guy under your sink? Probably not. I mean, that's what they're counting on.
And
that's exactly
that's
what
where he's hiding.
On.
And so there was no giant guy, but I don't have my glasses on either. So I'm not really in any shape to be looking outside. So all the shapes outside that are getting picked up in the moonlight look like other stuff. And I'm constructing these long narratives in my head about, you know, what they're coming to get and why they're coming to rob our house.
I it's so interesting. So I'm thinking of the three of us. Scott, you and I have seen Adam in action. I've never seen him literally kick the shit out of somebody, but I have seen Adam in a state where it makes me terrified of him.
Super angry, right?
And I've seen you be really mad, Scott. You've seen me be, you know, whatever it is that I get. But I'm just curious. So if I'm just thinking of the three of us, you know, we got to protect the lair. We feel like we're being menaced. You get up. So in your case, you're wandering around. What are you sleeping? You in underwear? Or are you going commando?
Yeah, no, I'll go t-shirt and undies.
Okay, yeah, so that's me too. Adam, how do you roll?
I usually will, if I'm wearing a t-shirt and I have to go check on who's robbing my house, I'll take my t-shirt off because it's more intimidating that way. Also more
it's
badass.
Way more intimidating. What about shoes? What are you wearing for shoes, Adam, when you go and check stuff out?
No, I'm going, you know, foot commando, I guess. What do they call that? What do they call that where you
foot,
don't have
foot
any
commando.
Shoes?
It's toeless gloves.
Yeah.
What about now, Scott? Now you're in your home at this point. You have a ranch style house. Mm-hmm. You're walking through it, looking. I'm guessing a little bit anxious and slender, and probably a little sleepy.
I'm also darting from place to place, trying to avoid the creaky boards in the floor.
Do you know where they are?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I do too. I do. I walk through the house like a lady. I mean, I walk through the house like a lady who's like, you know, gonna go, I don't know, eat some pie, you know. And I got to tell you, I'm just thinking of the three of us. I could see Adam.
Boy,
just really handing
can
a guy.
Can you imagine,
his liver.
Like, if you were just, you know, gingerly? This is your first job as a crook, and you're gingerly testing a back door, and suddenly Adam shows up shirtless.
5'7", 5'7" of Adam, man, you are not gonna. That's gonna be like stink on shit. That guy's all over you.
And you didn't expect to meet the business end of my ninja sword either,
or a boom mic.
So
he's in the industry. No, 5 minutes in is funny. Okay, the reason is Scott. The reason we see, as you were saying that, I really felt for you because. I don't get that too much anymore. I do get the waking up in the middle of the night having insane anxiety about how my entire life is falling apart. I get that, you know, three times a month. A night. And but you know what? I used to get it a lot more when I was younger. Like when I was younger, I used to get the whole, I don't know why, but I'm pretty sure somebody's in the house and there's going to be mayhem. And I don't know what it is, but when I was younger, yes.
Me too. I've just noticed lately that I'm starting to get less nervous about that.
Do you think it's testosterone, or I mean, like now more than ever, I've got more to protect if I were that kind of person. I mean, of course, you know, I'd probably just, you know, sit and cry regardless of what it was. But you know, I got a kid in the house. I got my wife. I got, you know,
a
nice laptop. You know, it's pretty sweet.
No, and I certainly also have. I used to be a bit even more paranoid and weird about that. So it's gone down for me.
It's gone down though. It's gone down. Do you remember that though? I mean, I remember.
Sure.
I'd wake up. What you described though, Scott, where your eyes kind of open up, and you're full. You don't stop to think about how you got to where you are. You're just so consumed with it.
Yeah.
And then you can't go back to sleep. It's over.
No.
And like in my case, I'm walking around. What am I? I'm walking around with like a 9-iron, or like I'm like a Danny Thomas character, you know? Or I got a baseball bat, and I'm thinking like, what the fuck am I going to do with this? If I encounter the kind of person, it's like my mom carries a handgun, and she's like, well, if I go to the bank, and I'm like, Mom, you understand anybody who like is going to rob somebody has so much more skin in the game than you, you know? And in this case, in my house, this guy's going to take a bat and just beat me with it until he's tired, right? I mean, it's not like I have bat training. I mean, I played left field. I wasn't very good, but I've never hit anybody with a bat. I'd probably apologize like as I was swinging.
Do you ever map out, like, you know, exactly how you're going to do what you're going to do if somebody is in the house? Like, I'm going to tell my girlfriend to move to the other side of the bed, give her the phone, tell her to call 911, but be very quiet about it. And then I'm going to go to the kitchen, get a knife. Which knife should I get? Okay, I should get not the bread knife, because you don't want to have something serrated, because then you have to, you know, sort of grate it over them. Not the paring knife, that's too short. So then you have to remember where I don't want to use a dirty knife, because that seems rude.
You want a Friday the 13th, you want a Jamie Lee Curtis knife. You want like a giant ass, like butchery looking knife, right?
Exactly.
But you're right, but you're going through in your head, you're going through the strategy. Adam, I could see you doing that. I could see you saying to your lady, stay here.
Oh, absolutely. Hold the dog, get in the closet.
Hold my shirt.
If anything happens to me, I love you. You get all my stuff. And then, you know, I have my stash. I wasn't joking before. I do have my, you know, my armory in another room, just full of ninja weapons.
This is the paper swords and the shurikens that we talked about before. You have it's like a spear or something.
Yeah, I have a ninja sword that I bought when I was in college and very drunk and watching the knife show.
1101-1816 is the item number on this one.
On TV, I still have it, just for this. Purpose, because
the home shopping thing with the show with the knives and the swords, you bought one of those.
And the nice thing about these practice katanas, oh that hurt.
Yeah, I bought one.
I bought a bonded, I was really high one night and bought a bonded leather briefcase. I don't know why.
Did it have a knife in it?
That was a weird show though. That was a really weird show, and they were forever, the guy was handling them. Do you remember this? He was always handle them very gently.
Yeah.
And then he cut stuff up.
There's that great video of the guy accidentally cutting himself, or like,
oh god, oh, I'm really hurt.
Oh, that hurt big time.
This really, really hurts.
Think I got myself good, Burrell, or whatever it is.
A piece of that, just the tip, just got me, Odell.
I love when Butterfly Knife Guy does that. You know, you ever seen Butterfly Knife Guy?
Yeah.
Everybody knows Butterfly Knife Guy. You have no idea that a butterfly knife, if it's sharpened, will cut your finger to the knuckle while you're trying to flip it around like you're fucking, you know, Chuck Norris.
Well, I think everybody knows Butterfly Knife Guy because everybody knows IT Guy.
And, oh, sure. And he's always looking for a reason. Yeah, oh, you got some Cat 6? All you really need is Cat 5, but let me... Oh, I got a Leatherman. Which one do you want? So you've got an armory. So is it in your closet, in your bedroom?
Well, I don't want to give away too much.
Oh, sure, sure. No, I understand. Mm-hmm. I understand. It's need to know. How does your lady feel about that? Does she mind you having swords? Is that comforting to her?
Look, this is the way it is in our household. I'm the king of the castle. It's my duty. Are you laughing?
I'm not.
I'm not laughing. I'm not laughing. No. No.
I don't know if... Anyhow, that's weird. Okay, so I'm the king of the castle. It's my duty to defend my... What's going on here?
it's so funny. There's so many things with my wife where we both have similar feelings about things, but very seldom at the same time. And she's frequently the one who's like the I heard a noise person.
Sure, yeah.
And then I'm very like, oh God, it's the wind or whatever. But like if I'm I heard a noise person, that's when I'm like, go get in the closet. I remember I love you, you know, kind of stuff. And I go to my armory, which is like, you know, it's like a croc, you know, and a ram chip or something. You know, I'm going to put it on a string and swing it around. No, that's not rubber. It's a space age polymer.
I picture Adam silently, barefootedly walking backwards across the floor, scattering foot injuring caltrops as he walks.
Mini micro machine.
You're seeing it more like it's like a Cape Fear thing or like a Home Alone thing. You think he's got it like rigged up so that when, you know, you're thinking about, do you do that, Adam? So if you had to defend the castle, each room would be secured. You'd work out what there'd be string over a door, maybe. Usually they get clotheslined if they run out. Trap, maybe, sure. Like a pan hits him in the face. Like, you know, the guy from Joe Pesci, right?
Yeah, keep the change, you filthy animal.
My problem is I want to do all that stuff, but I end up just using all of my available prep time, if there were a burglar, writing my will.
Rewriting it from the previous
Rewriting it. I got to find the paper. I got to get a pen. I got to get enough light to write by, but not enough light for the burglar to see me writing my will. And it takes a while to figure out, you know, who's important in my life right now and who do I love and who deserves my record player and who deserves my chamois cloth collection.
Right. And you got, it's hard to find an executor at that hour.
That's another thing. Ask me how to find a notary public at that hour.
But I mean, once you got that settled, you know, and you've struck the document and you're good to go. See, I'm imagining though. So Adam, now you've got I don't want to give away your armory, but you hear a noise, right? Yeah. You're gonna grab a bladed weapon.
That's step number one. Make sure that the dog and the girlfriend are secure.
And by secure, you mean handcuffed to the bed.
Our windows are not super easy to open. Otherwise, I would insist that they probably jump from the second floor.
Mm-hmm. And just get out and wait in the car or something.
Yeah,
you live in a comic book, I think. I would break my ankle like falling down the steps, I think, you know, before I would like jump out a window.
What would you, I mean, really, like, if there really were, then, you know, of course, this has happened to all of us some number of times where we've gotten creeped out enough that we really think that there's something going on and we've patrolled the house with or without a weapon in hand.
Yes.
You know, what if you actually came into the family room and there was a guy there, you know, hefting up your VCR?
Yeah, that's something you can never know what you're going to say unless you're in the situation. I think that I would say, is this really what you want to be doing?
Oh, so sort
like
of a
career counseling. Like
yeah.
Just talk therapy, maybe talk him down, and then we'd become friends eventually. Maybe I'd help put him through school or something.
So you're thinking you guys are going to share a 40 on the stoop.
Yeah, yeah. I'd call him Dog, maybe.
Yeah, tough guy to tough guy.
Sure.
That's not, you know, the thing is, Adam, like, you seem like a guy who's probably punched people before. The thing that my observation about any violence
never
is that I've had a small bit of violence visited upon me and very little violence I've visited upon other people. My impression of all violence is it's unbelievably sudden and fast. Yeah. And real fights between, like, real people who fight, it's over usually in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. It isn't like a movie where people, you know, unless it's the kind of slap fight that I would probably be involved. Like, Scott, if you and I were, like, trying to decide who got the last scone, you know.
There would be a lot of wrinkled eyebrows and matted down moosey hair.
45 minutes of silence and just turning slightly away from each other. But, you know, my impression of it is, and I think this is borne out by anybody who thinks that they're a ninja and then actually gets in a fight, is that you have no idea how that stuff works until it actually happens. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's why it's like anything. It's like, it's funny, like nobody would think, I talk about this a lot with the stuff I do with work. It's like nobody would ever wake up today and go, you know what? I've decided that I'm a world-class athlete, so I'm going to run 26 miles today. I mean, you could think that every day, but until you actually, you don't realize that a quarter mile into it, you would die. Same here. I think everybody thinks they're great at fighting until they actually get hit. Mm. It hurts so much to get hit in the nose, and it happens so fast. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just be sitting there feeling really nervous about how to start the fight. I mean, with the, you know?
Yeah, I would be the same way, but... And now that Adam's mentioned that, it makes me think, how many really strong friendships, lifelong friendships that you know of or that you've read about or heard of, start with an event in which the original friends are actually opponents? You know, like you hear about the guys in war who are on opposite sides, and then later Joey goes back to Ho Chi Minh City and meets Tran, and Tran ends up being like this great guy, and they end up hanging out all the time. Mm-hmm. Or
fighting over a girl. You start out and you go, she's not worth it. And now we're pals.
Yeah. McCartney Jackson style.
Michael, we're not going to fight about this, okay?
Paul, I think I told you. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
What I'm saying is maybe there's an opportunity here not to... You know, not to steal things from people or to put people in danger, but rather to create lifelong friendships based on theft and danger.
Because friendship is seldom where you expect to find it.
Thank you. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. You're not going to, you know, walk into the Borders, go over to the self-help section and find your soulmate, your dude mate. This is going to be somebody that's stealing your VCR at 3 a.m. and you're holding a ninja sword to their neck.
Is it possible that maybe we're just not doing enough of the heavy lifting as the people who are being robbed? Is it possible that maybe we need to get in front of this? We go out to the house of somebody who's a theoretical robber and we go into their house and we wait for them to find us with their ninja sword, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you have to extend a hand.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. In fact, I'm thinking there may be a program here where we, you know, like... burglars for hope or
breaking in.
Yeah. So you go and you rob somebody's house, mm-hmm. and if they catch you, you go through this 4 or 5 step process whereby you become lifelong friends. If they don't catch you, you take the stuff and you sell it at the pawn shop and you make enough money mm-hmm. to pay the rent.
When you come back after they get stuff with the insurance money.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea, because I think, Scott, one of the complicated things about being an adult is you don't have as many opportunities to meet new people.
It's
right?
such a great
so
point.
You sign up for classes, you go to things, you go to the mall, you have a Cinnabon, you know. And I think really to have an opportunity to see in my very own home, I could meet somebody, you know, who's not somebody I would have met anyway. You know, I mean, let it begin with me. Let me go to their house. Maybe they got stuff. They steal stuff. They probably got pretty good stuff. You know. You know, and it's hard when you're shopping for people around the holidays or for birthdays. You know, you don't want to get something that, you know, and if you've gotten something, you know, like meth or, a pit bull, mm-hmm. maybe steal mm-hmm. a pit bull. They like pit bulls, right?
Everybody likes pit bulls.
Yeah. Meeting people's hard.
I'm a professional voice actor.
I'm a student of ad hoc signage. I'm a big fan of ad hoc
signage.
It is
wonderful. I totally agree with you.
and that is the thing where you've got signage. Like the people who made the building said, okay, here's what you need to know, right? Mm. Emergency exit. Here's the elevators. This is where you poop. But that only begins, it doesn't even touch on the culture of an office. Do you get this, Scott? Do you get this?
Oh, absolutely. Just through life, you know, at all the places that I've worked, I've always been fascinated by this. One recent place where I've worked has a delightful little sign on the toaster saying, I recommend somewhere between 3 and 4 on the darkness setting.
Is there a drawing of an owl on there?
Just 2 eyes, you know, like some raised eyebrows.
Because, you know, if you think about it, like anywhere you go, there's just like it's all the stuff that the people who designed the space thought that people needed to know for legal or, you know, usage reasons.
Right.
But then there's all the stuff about how the place really works. And like you go into anywhere in San Francisco, any place in San Francisco, you go to take a dump, it's going to say, don't use too much toilet paper or the pipes will back up.
Right.
Or you get like, don't burn popcorn. Your mom doesn't work here. Stop eating my lunch. Those are my underwear, whatever.
Cheese is for the clients. That was a big one where I worked.
Cheese is for the clients?
Yeah, it's the client cheese sign.
I love it, though. And I love that there's like usually like 2 or 3 people that are responsible for a vast amount of all caps Times New Roman signs about how people are doing the office wrong.
Please, please, please. Dry erase markers get capped. Return to their original workrooms.
Do not erase. And the ones on doors. Where it's, and you know, my favorite, I like the ones that are like, you know, no smoking within 20 feet of this door, close here, you know, pets in the office, some people have allergies, you know.
There was a car that was parked in our parking lot that was just totally taking up 2 spaces. It wasn't a big car. The person just parked lazily and didn't think twice about it. And so we sort of fretted, my coworker and I fretted about, well, should we leave a note? What should we do? I mean, aside from just take a picture and shame them, like should we write a note? Should we do something else? What should we do? And so we, in the end, we settled on a note that said, "Hey, smiley face." Literally. So yeah, your parking, quote unquote. Anyways, later.
That's astoundingly passive aggressive.
No, it's a can you please park in one space? And then we slash their tires.
And finally,
is that Randy?
Randy Macho Man Savage?
No, Randy Newman. Yeah. I heard that Randy Newman.
Sorry.
I got enough material. Time to make an episode. Merlin found out he had too much mac and cheese. He was bumping into the mic. It was like he was going to vomit. And then Adam got his sword and he hit up on the burglar. He said, Diggy, I love you. Take care. Get into the closet. And then Scott had tequila in his special glass. And the white man said, you gotta work for me. Get on the ship. And I don't know what's gonna happen to this. It's so hard to know until Adam does the cut. And the people that I see nobody here, no one on the car. You park like an asshole. Yeah, that's right, everybody, you park like an asshole. Everybody parks like an asshole.
This has been You Look Nice Today, featuring Lonely Sandwich, Scott Simpson, and Hot Dogs Ladies. Thank you.
I will go, really? Really? Oh, yeah? Really? Really? Swedish girls at a party? Really? Wow. Grand piano? I am ringing. Please pick me up. I don't have work. Everybody else does. Pick me up. Look at me now, burning popcorn. Pick me up.